We're in Proverbs 22, verses 5 and 6. This is the, I thought, since we really only had this one week before Christmas in Proverbs, so ought to look at this one. See, and they're going to be perfect because they're going to go on the couple side. Well, it started off with just Vance and Julie. That's why I said, well, it's about couples that don't get along. And then Diane came in. I said, well, on this side, it'll be separated couples. So. We're just here.
We'll just talk later.
Actually, we're kind of a follow-up on parenting in Proverbs 22, which is the probably one of the more well-known proverbs about training up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. If this particular verse, there are at least three interpretations of it, and one of them you probably don't hear too much of. The other two you do hear about. One would be like a vocational view, and the stress is on the position your son or daughter would take in society, and it's more and that's more of a historic, like looking within Proverbs in Proverbs 22 verse 6. So that'd be more in terms of that culture of Israel. The other one is personal aptitude, and this is one that's really stressed a lot today, and you hear a lot about this. This would be, you're looking at your child's personalities, capabilities. And so your parenting is in view of who that child is. And then the third one is the moral view. And it stresses the good way the parent is to direct the child. When you look at the overall context, and then Carolyn, see, she came in and just wrote the whole thing, so... Oh, well, maybe we can put her in another. I have to divide it in three parts. So now you're going to join the separated couples, aren't you? So in Proverbs 22, if you look at the first seven verses, and notice that they, especially in Proverbs, the general theme of Proverbs is that it's directed toward youth. It's all written toward the audience of a youth. And even this, while this one verse, and we tend to read a lot of times Proverbs by individual verses, which they work that way, but there's also a context. And this context is the whole thing is this, this education, this development of this child. But yet in the middle of this one, this particular proverb is addressed to parents. And so it's a little different than most of them, though there are, some that are that way for sure, because there are several in parenting, like discipline and so forth. And it says, a good name is to be more desired than great wealth. Favor is better than silver and gold. The rich and the poor have a common bond. The Lord is the maker of them all. The prudent sees the evil and hides himself, but the naive go on and are punished for it. The reward of humility and the fear of the Lord are riches, honor, and life. Thorns and snares are in the way of the perverse. He who guards himself will be far from them. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower becomes the lender's slave. In the midst of these verses that are exhorting, we come to 5 and 6, verses 5 and 6, which, have this moral aspect to it. And verse 5, it talks about the perverse. Perverse is, the word means to twist, to make crooked. It's referring to sinful, perverse acts. So it says, thorns and snares are in the way of the perverse. And so the picture is, being off the trail into where all the briar bushes are, you know, where all the thistles and the thorns are. And it says, you know, so the one that goes there is going to get snared. And the idea of a snare and is in that sense of a trap, an allure. You know, we would think of most often probably in fishing, where they have different hooks and spinners and different things to attract. But it's a snare. It's something. Often we use that term with traps to snare something in terms of a trap. And so these become off the trail, and they trap someone that goes, you know, off. On the other hand, he who guards himself will be far from them. That is, far from the snares. And so that exhortation. And then it follows with the proverb in 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he's old, he will not depart of it. There really are three parts to this. The first verse there, train up a child in the way he should go. You know, we'll look at that in two parts, and then the second part, the outcome. Even when he's old, he will not depart from it. So train up a child. You know, to train up a child is, you know, a pretty common translation in the New American Standard. The NIV is very similar. I forgot what it is. Does anybody have NIV?
Train.
So see, you know, they're doing the same thing. Basically, and what's the rest of the NIV? How does it read? I forget.
Train the child in the way he should go.
In the way he should go. See, so the New American Standard and NIV are, you know, basically, you know, the same on that part of it. But the word train up really doesn't mean to train up. It's a word that means to dedicate. And it's used in every passage, though it's only used a few times. Only occurs about five times in Scripture. And it's in the sense of dedicate. You know, so it could be like dedicate a building, dedicate a house, dedicate an altar. But here it has that sense of to kind of along those lines of to dedicate, would be in the sense of initiative, to start, inaugurate, is the concept here. So it's, you know, starting someone on the right path is kind of the idea there. And so, you know, you think about how are you going to parent, and you know, and it's not probably so much in view of that you know, initial when they're born, and so if you get started right then, though there's a lot to be said for that, but it's you know, there is a continual aspect to it, surely, but it's also been suggested that it has, in the sense of this dedicate, probably has in the idea of narrowing, hedging in. And so this train up a child in the way he should go, or to you know, this idea of to start right, you know, it's probably this idea of to narrow, to hedge in, to put boundaries, to give parameters to where this child would go. The second part is where the interpretations vary. When it says, in the way he should go, the phrase more literally could read, according to the way. And the issue becomes, is the parent to teach the child the way he goes, the way he's going, according to his personality, or is it the way he should go? And that's where the differences come in. You know, is it, how do you understand this? And if you have, like, a Ryrie Study Bible, Ryrie has it as literally according to his way, that is the child's habits, interest. So he's seeing it in the way that you know, the way he does go. And where this comes from is that this kind of phrase that's used right here occurs a few times outside of Proverbs, and it's in that sense of according to some nature, the nature of. For instance, in you know, it has that idea of like manner or custom. A daughter's lot, Lot's daughters, are, you know, looking at their marriage prospects, and they're basically saying, according to the nature of things, according to the customs, we don't have any prospects. And so they said, you know, then the firstborn said to the younger, and this is Genesis 19:31, our father is old, and there is not a man on earth to come into us after the manner of the earth, after the way of what's kind of natural, or after the custom of the earth. And so, they conclude their only possibility for children in existence then is to, have an incestual relationship. And Isaiah 10:24 says, therefore, thus says the Lord of hosts, O my people who dwell in Zion, do not fear. The Assyrian who strikes you with the rod and lifts up his staff against you the way Egypt did. So you're looking at the custom of Egypt. So you can see from both of these, it's looking at the bent of something, the nature of something, the custom of something. And so when you take that usage and you bring it into this passage, then it makes perfect sense to say that you would train up a child in the way that he is bent, what his natural bent is, what his custom is. You know, the direction that child is going by personality, by mental abilities, by his stage in life, that's the way you parent. However, within Proverbs, this idea of the way is never used accordingly. It's always of a moral way. You're always talking about on the right path, the God path. And since Proverbs doesn't mean the way within Proverbs doesn't mean personality or a stage of life, then it's preferable, here to see this as it's looking at the proper way. And you see that both translations, New American Standard and the NIV, have it that way, as they, even though they say train, though that's more in terms of how do you translate it, finding a word that does translate the concept. So it's not really a word per se for teaching, but if you use the other one to initiate, to start within that context, it ends up meaning some sense of giving direction, training. But it says train a child in the way he should go. And so that becomes the issue in these translations. Is it the way he should go, or the way that he is going by his nature? I'm not talking about sinful nature, but nature in terms of personality. I think it's much better in the overall context of Proverbs to see it as that we're talking about moral education here. But you can see why the other one is so very popular, because in a society that where psychology has become very popular, that brings it in, where we talk about personality traits, we talk about all the things. So that brings in a whole element that makes it a very popular one. But also, the other one that I don't think is the correct view is also right. It's not the right translation, I don't believe. I don't believe that's what Solomon had in mind. I don't believe what this passage is saying. But it's also correct that, when you hear people that raise their kids according to what they want that child to be. I mean, putting it in an extreme. Not talking about, I want you to, make good grades and I want you to go to college. I'm not talking about those kinds of things. But when you start saying, this is what you're going to be one way or the other, and you hear of people that have, talents in some areas, but dad wants them to be, an athlete and not an artist, and it's not even an option. If you look at like Tiger Woods, it seems very much that his parents said at a very early course that you're going to be this golfer. But yet, what little, and I've not read much about it, but little in the interviews and stuff I remember seeing in the past, there seemed to be a real relationship there. And that's contrasted with, and I don't remember the guy's name, but a pro football player that son was a quarterback at UCLA or USC, and this has been about 15 years ago. This kid, his whole life, everything had been done to make him an NFL quarterback, and he never made it through college because of drug use. But it seemed in that setting to be very much, from what you heard anyway, about a parent saying this is who you will be, much more than there being those relationships. So I think this verse, this idea of parenting can be there, but that's not what this passage is teaching. This passage is about moral education, which is very intriguing in terms that that's just not much of our society. It's just not there, anywhere. Character education is just not much there. Remember when I was in high school, and it was, I think, that was somewhat debated at that time, and some people weren't real happy about using those terms because education before then had been strictly about, or more so, I shouldn't say strictly, more so about the three R's but some of the phrases being used, it was to make you a good citizen. And that was a departure from, teaching the three R's. Well, those phrases may be used at times, but there's really nothing in our society that, by and large, talking generally, not isolations, that it's about making, kids good citizens, because there's no definition of what good is. There's all these debates of, you wouldn't even, and what a citizen, even being a citizen at various times isn't positive, and various things. And now I lost his name. Bennett, wrote his couple of books about moral education, and he's got it where these stories. So the literature you can read your kids and various things that that teach morals. And if you go back and you look at a lot of the older materials, it was about morals. The old readers, McGuffey readers, that it was teaching reading by stories that taught character. And if you look at a lot of old movies and Captain Courageous, that old, there's a story about this spoiled kid, and it's all about this character development. The old Andy Griffith movies, a lot of those had a very definite moral theme through them. A lot of them just were, silly things with Barney, doing dumb things. But some of them had real moral, and those, that wasn't all that in common. And so the idea here is teaching your children, starting off and having that deal, is this is a way you ought to go. The second half of the verse, talks about the outcome, and it gives the general outcome. When he's old, he will not depart from it. The idea here is not that there may be this gap. He may for some time go somewhere else, but he'll return. That's not what's intended by the wording. It's not trying to allow for that. And the New American Standard, by the inclusion of the word even, tries to emphasize that, train up the child in the way he should go, even when he's old. So it's that continual thing. It's looking at, you train him up and he walks in that path. Now, having said that, you have to remember that Proverbs, they're not promises. They're not guarantees. These are general observations of life, saying this is the way things, might generally work out. So it's looking at if you think of it as a guarantee, then if you parented really well, like according to this, and then you had problems, then there would be all this guilt, because there's going to be that anyway. But it would be a legitimate guilt if this was a promise. I really didn't do that, because it says that. But that's not the case here. But we're looking at what generally happens. And so you can look at families. You can find people where they had nobody as far as the home that was given moral direction to them, and they've made choices and they have done well. And you can find other people that where that's been their environment, and they truly were provided that, and they went away. But more often than not, the case is if you train your children this way, then that's the way they will go. And so the idea here is to Protect your youth from the deadly ways of the perverse by initiating this start in life that's the opposite of what their natural foolishness would be. There's this fallen nature, and we naturally would go this way. It's so intriguing that we live, some of the things that are said today, and it's, there's some that think when it comes to religion or morality, that you shouldn't give your kids any direction. You're imposing your ideas on them, and let them grow up and make those choices for themselves. And that somebody's liking that to planting a garden and not pulling any weeds. Just saying, I'm going to let the garden, if the fruit's able, let it get strong. There won't be any fruit. The weeds will just take over. And that's what happens when we give no direction. So here we're looking at this responsibility, imparting of direction by parents. And I think that idea of narrow and hedging it in is what you're looking at. Is how do you put these parameters around kids? And it's not when they're older, and it's not just when they're young, but you're starting, and wherever you're at that point is where you're starting. But ideally, you're starting when they're, when they're born. But you're given that direction. You're saying this is the way. And in essence, that's what all the Proverbs is doing. This one is just specifically given this directive here. The recognition that kids make choices. So this is not the whole of it, because we have other passages that is exhorting them not to go in the off track, not to get involved in this, not to get involved with prostitutes. So there are all these things that, as the verse before that said, stay away from the perverse things. They make choices and it's directed them. But as parents, these are the directives toward us. And then it also, as you look at that, you think about ourselves. Where are we? You could ask it in terms of what was our, how were we parented? What kind of directions were given in our lives? And how are we walking according there? Or how have you overcome that? So, to be in the right place. As I was studying this, I was thinking, I didn't grow up in I wouldn't say I grew up in a Christian home. My parents were Christian, but I wouldn't say it was a Christian home. But it was a very moral home. I went to a fairly liberal church. But I grew up with a very much a sense of right and wrong, which wasn't unusual in that time. But I think it was always interesting, it was very much, this is right and wrong. The downside of that, there wasn't any foundation to why things are right and wrong. But they're still given those directions, those parameters about things. The real challenge today is that with relative truth, there's the idea of right and wrong is pretty non-existent, even among Christian kids, and that's what's so shocking. When I was in high school, kids do things today they haven't ever done before, because there are some things that are just available. Certain kinds of drugs are available that weren't before. But in the sense of, drugs or alcohol, things like that have always been available. All the sexual stuff's always been available. So there's nothing that kids are, have that opportunity today that they didn't have before. Some major differences is it's so much more available today, and the consequences sometimes are immediate death or very quick death, as opposed to in the past. But when I was in high school, people did things that were wrong. The difference between today and then is that anybody that did any of those things then, anybody that had, sex or anybody that was drinking or those kinds of things, they knew it was wrong, and they would have said it was wrong. Now, doesn't mean they weren't going to do it, but they would have said, this is wrong. Today, even Christian kids would question whether things are wrong. Why is it wrong? And we get into a lot of situational things where that it's Well, you know, you might say, well, in general, something is wrong, but it's not wrong in this situation because, you know, we're in love or whatever. When I was in college, I had to take a class, or I needed a class, because I could graduate, but I needed one more hour. And so I was going to summer school, I needed to find a class that I could get for 1 hour because I was taking these other classes too. But I couldn't go. My schedule, because of the other classes I was taking, I wasn't going to be able to go to class. And so I went to the Methodist Student Union and I asked, you know, if I could take this class, you know, kind of do an independent study on this class that was on, I forgot the name of it, was marriage, dating marriage, and something like that. And so I took this class, and I remember very, very well the final exam, because the answer I was going to give was not going to be the right answer. It wasn't going to generate a good grade. But the situation was, and this was the exam, I mean, you know, the question was, your little sister is engaged to, you know, this guy, and his, you know, his dad's a physician, and the guy's planning on pursuing that also, going to medical school. And his dad is paying for his way through college as long as he doesn't get married. But if he gets married, he's already said, you know, it's going to pay for anything else. And so they're thinking about just living together, since dad's put these parameters on them. What is your advice? Well, the barely passing advice is, that's wrong. I know that. I do know that. That's when you just make a C or whatever, D, whatever. But which was okay to me. I just wanted the credit. But, you know, so these things aren't brand new. That was in a, you know, very much more of a liberal a position on campus than would have been normally held. And that was, you know, coming from more of the liberal perspective. But today, that, it would be the opposite. That'd be the norm. The other would be more the exception. And so that's the challenge, you know, is to you know, always be narrowing in. Any thoughts or questions? Or
I want to know how old
he is. Yeah, it's older than you, though, because we're still waiting on you to get back on track here. Yeah. You know, and the other one there is within Proverbs as general, and, you know, I'm talking about these general rules, this Proverbs would say, you know, when you're looking at the older, that the older are only the ones that are walking with the Lord that are positive. Because the others, the fools, they die early. Now, those are general truths. And, you know, we all know that even in Scripture you can find where that's not always true. But the general realms there. So I don't know the any exact age, but contrast between younger, though.
About 47.
Older than that.
Well, like you were saying before, even like William Bennett's, the children's book, we have the children's book of virtue, okay. And I love those stories in there because they are all about moral and character. And the shows that our kids watch today, the kids are basically disrespectful. I mean, smart, alecky, and just it's a completely different.
It is.
There's no.
Exactly.
I remember Ansel's reaction to
and
you think of that. She even goes, makes the dad look like a bumbling idiot.
Even in Bob was watching something with them, it was Zach and Cody or one of those, and Jack Drake. He was like,
a big difference there is, I mean, because so often you're trying to show this contrast, and so a lot of these movies that where there is some contrast, where the change is going to occur, where, you know, maybe it's you know, there's, I can't even think of one, I'm trying to think of what it's going to be, but that's was that where they switch bodies, the mothers, yeah, something like that. So in the newer ones, you know, you're going to have all of this attitude to show this conflict, so that you can show the harmony later on. Or in the Christmas Home Alone, in the very first one, you know, just you have all the bratty attitude, so you can see the switch. So the positive thing in those things is there's a switch taking place, and you're seeing, you know, the end result. But you know, if you look at the old movie Captain's Courageous, the same thing occurs there. He's just a total brat. The difference is there's nothing funny about him being a brat. It's shown from the very beginning. You know, from the very beginning, you're turned off by his selfishness and this arrogance. I'm like, well, you know, I'll buy the ship or whatever. It's been too long since I've seen it, but he struts around. And they basically say, you don't work, you don't eat. And, you know, and he sulks around for a while and he decides they're serious. Well, that's, I think those kinds of things are what we see as a difference. So they make the other, so, you know, try to be funny and all this, and then a lot more, you know, perverse language and stuff. So, yeah, we've some movies we've seen like that. You just want to zip through that bratty part almost so you can get, because you know they're going to, well, not all of them, but, you know, some of them are going to change. But, yeah, I think that, so that approach is really different. We, you know, today it's trying to make, there's more of an emphasis on there being bratty and how funny it is than the actual switch to the positive character.
And the more you see it, you end up then making it any more right. The more you see it, the more accepted.
Yeah.
It's just because that's,
yeah,
that's just the way. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, commercials, everything. I'm thinking, I mean, everything.
It's
just like
you
said,
it's just a pulp sometimes. Oh, why do they, I mean, just the title of some of the programs. Why do they keep saying that word? I mean,
yeah,
you know, it was...
Yeah, and that's...
Just even advertising, not even the program.
Yeah.
Saying the name of the program.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's that, you know, and the you know, their standards of saying that, you know, these things won't be on TV until after, what it was, 8 or 9. You know, it's like everything else that, whatever, you know, assuming that is an absolute standard, which is, I don't think it's too absolute, but, you know, what was just keeps getting filtered down, you know. What's not acceptable is, you know, in a few years is now.
Not the commercials for the program.
Yeah.
They, you know, they might not see the program at 9 o'clock, but they sure should.
Yeah, the preview.
And the commercials are so much more, blatant than,
they're,
you know,
like R-rated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you were saying the other day, half the time you see a commercial now and you don't even know what it's a commercial for.
Yeah.
You don't even know what they're advertising.
What was that R scandal, raunchy?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember in high school, I dated this girl 1 year, and her parents were pretty strict, and we didn't go to very many movies and stuff, and we mainly, you know, watched TV or something, and I remember how embarrassing it was when bra commercials came on. And if you go back to then, that's when they wore the bras over their clothes.
Well, the one I can believe.
And, you know.
Calvin Klein.
Yeah.
Jeans with the invisible.
Yeah.
Is that on now?
No.
There's a Giorgio Armani commercial right now that I flip immediately as soon as I see it coming on, because you see this man and this woman, and it's like they're trying to get together. She's going through traffic and all this stuff, and then they show him running up, and they go past each other, and he goes to a man, and she goes to a woman.
Oh, really?
Hit the button.
So there are a lot of those things that, you know, that you have to deal with that, you know, at an earlier age. Because I remember the first, you know, using that. I remember the first time we were in seventh grade in the study hall, in the library, in this. Which we weren't studying, and the only ones around there, you know, like, I don't know, 6 or 8 of us guys, and we're goofing around, and this teacher, you know, I think it was his only year there, but I remember he said something about, something about homosexuals, you know, acting like homosexuals or something, if somebody had their arm around somebody or something, and nobody had any clue. We had to look it up in the dictionary. Nobody had a clue. Yeah. And, you know, and so, you know, words and events that are age appropriate. So, you know, like in junior high, that wasn't even something we would know about yet, which is age appropriate. You shouldn't know about it then.
Mm-hmm.
And but now,
oh, yeah,
you know,
it's
it's going to be taught in schools, yeah, in certain schools, you know. And that's...
Sarah came last year saying, you know, one that... She's got a... I can't remember the girl's name. Like, yeah, she told everybody she was gay today.
Yeah.
Oh, in fourth grade?
Yeah.
She goes, what's that mean?
Yeah. She was happy today, so let's move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so those things are... You know, the standard. But all of that comes back to relative truth. And, you know, if,
and
you know.
In the home, I guess, your home, about training up your child.
Mm-hmm.
Some days are not better than others.
Well, but but it's always going to be that. But if you think of it just in that terms of, you know, hedges and paths and direction and. Yeah.
When I'm older. I mean, it's not like, it's like it's acceptable now because of where she is, but when is that not going to be a part? When I'm older. I mean, it's kind of like, I'll get there someday.
Yeah. Robin had that conversation, and it wasn't, you know, these weren't bad things. I mean, there were things that I wouldn't necessarily approve of because of more personality and culture, but, you know, I mean, like hairstyle and tattoos, but I mean, they're not, you know, the moral, you know, kinds of things. And this girl was telling Robin that, you know, she's you know basically Amanda's age and a little older, but it was like, well, yeah, I know when I'm professional, you know, when I get out of college, I won't be able to do that, but, you know, now I just want to, you know, do it. And I mean, in one sense, a certain part of that, okay, that's correct. Like I said, these really are all moral things, though those do set a pattern for who you are. I mean, it's not so much like, well, I'm going to go take a summer job because when I get married, I won't be able to go to Alaska and work in the summers, and I think I'll take it the summer. It's not that, you know, you're talking about the way you condition yourself to act, and it also puts who you're around.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, you're, so that, you know, those things become there, you know.
We had a Brett's cousin that adopted the two kids from Russia. Real active in their church and Christian. And his other cousin, Kim, is an atheist. And their sisters. And everyone in the family is believers. And when we get together for the family thing, we all pray and she just stands there, you know, that kind of thing. Well, she had a opinion thing in the newspaper about the Golden Compass, saying that why can't these parents that are not letting their children go see it, that are Christian, why doesn't their faith hold up to presenting another view to the child?
Yeah.
You know, why aren't you letting them make their own decisions, blah, 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 blah. And I said, this is coming from a woman who's an atheist, number one, and number two, I have no children.
Yeah.
You know, and this proverb kept coming back to me, you train your child, you know, and when they're old, you know, it's like, well, what do you want?
Yeah.
Who do you want to train your child? I mean, you and your family and your church, which is solid and truth, or the world.
Yeah.
And it's just like, she doesn't get it.
No, if you're truly into relative truth, which, you know,
and
you
I'll
just realize that's where society is, that it's, you should not put those parameters on your kids. Let them make those choices. It's, you know, and you see some of those connections between even the way abortion is handled. You know, I mean, what it should be, I mean, as far as the way that it should be argued, it should be, I'm pro-abortion, I'm anti-abortion, period. It's not that you're pro-life, because you're truly not necessarily pro-life. You're pro-life about abortion, about, you know, an unborn baby, but a lot of people that hold pro-life may hold to capital punishment. So you're not necessarily, you know, but that sounds right. Well, on the other side, the argument is, you know, the right to choose, you know, make a choice over a woman's body. Well, how can you argue with that? I mean, that makes sense. I mean, shouldn't a woman be able to make choices about her body? Yeah. But that's not what we're talking about in either one of them. And so if you could ever keep it on the real issues, then it would be. But relative truth puts it in another. So even that, those terminology about abortion, see, comes into play like this. That child has a right to make their own decisions. And
well, I'm really interested to see how Christmas Eve goes.
Well, why would she come?
Why would she come to all of it?
War.
See, family.
If it's wrong to kill babies, it's wrong to kill people in the war.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, just like, you know, say, you've got a point there. If, you know, the only reason you should ever be in a war is if somebody's trying to kill you, and if that baby's trying to kill you, then maybe it's legitimate. But, well, why don't we spend a few moments in prayer? There is a movie coming out. At first, I thought it was a joke, but Tim Marlard sent me this clip. It's Ben Stein has a movie coming out. It's a documentary. It's coming out in February, and it's what's the name of it? Something about, I can't remember. You're Excused or something. But anyway, it's very much on these kind of talk, but it's mainly on divine design. Or, you know, or saying, you know, higher, you know, intelligent design, and you know, because they're not using that term now instead of creation, but it's, you know, anti-Darwinism, or it's saying, you know, maybe there's something else, but it's really intriguing watching the trailer on it, and you know, talking about all of these people that are, you know, lose their jobs, that are persecuted, that can't write articles, can't get them published if they don't hold to Darwinism, And so what he was saying, exactly what you're saying, is there's all this tolerance for everything everywhere except there. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of intriguing.
Has anybody watching Clash of the Flyers? You know, where all these people with Patti LaBelle and Blake Shelton and Michael Bolton, they went to their hometowns and made a choir. Patti LaBelle is like going to church. And she saw, and it was so neat to see on national television saying, God is blessing all of it. I mean, she's just out there with it. And I was just like, yes! But it's a really good song.
Well, are there things we can pray about specifically?